Okay. Today is February 5th, 2025. It is 6:07 PM. I apologize, we're running late, but we knew we had a couple of members who are joining us, so we wanted to make sure that we had quorum. This session of the DDD District West Independent Oversight Committee is now called to order. Do we have anybody who has to disclose a conflict of interest? If there is, the committee member needs to disclose why. Okay. I'm going to do the call to public now because I get to mess up the agenda. Well, actually, I'm sorry. We should do the introductions first, then we'll do the call to the public. My name is Deidre Friedman. I'm the chair until one of you guys decides that you want to replace me, and I'll very happily hand over the chair to them. Hey, Jamie. My son Andy was a DDD member, DDD Altex Mercy Care member from 2003 when he was 2 years old until March of 2021 when he died. By profession, I'm a retired attorney and now a professional compliance officer. So I'm just going to go down my little list here. Brad, would you please introduce yourself?
I'm Brad Doyle. I am a parent of Curtis, who's 38. He's been in the system going almost all the way back to when they first started the DDD program in Altex. I've been advocating and doing things. If I bump into something that I decide to get on, that I just don't get straight answers, like dental, behavior management not being covered. Oh no, it was never covered. The mistake that Access, or really the mistake that any of the agencies make, is if they tell me something that I can verify immediately, if not sooner, that it's incorrect, because then I guess the mess, just don't lie to me. It just doesn't go over well. But other than that, looks like I'm going to be I've transitioned from my old employment. Now it looks like I'm going to have to spend some time down at the state capitol, and potentially, maybe, I don't know if I can, I'll try to maybe attend some the PBA meetings and try to do a little bit more to help out.
Okay, Brad. I don't know if they lie. It may be information, misinformation they're giving you out of ignorance. So
I think the quickest answer is to give you, okay, incorrect information on purpose, right, just so you go away. How's that?
Yeah. Well, I never blame something on malice when ignorance is probably the answer. So.
But it's, yeah,
you're educating, so I
come out a little strong there. I've learned there's correct. So thank you, Dee, for correcting me there.
Hey, Crystal, you're next.
All right, I'm Crystal Fox. I am. I have a daughter, Tia, that has autism and epilepsy and had a brain tumor. So she's been in the DDD system since she was two, and I also am I'm a psychiatric nurse for over 30 years, 35 now, 40 going on probably. And I also am a co-founder of Arizona Mad Moms that really like focuses on serious mental illness. And so kind of in the DD system, I've been also focusing on the dual diagnose, the mentally ill and the, DDD system. And I think that's about it, except for that I'm kind of along with Brad. I've had a rough week, so I was down at the governor's office and they too tried to snowball me and it didn't go very well. And usually I'm the quiet one, D. It didn't go too good.
Stop hanging out with me, Crystal.
Yeah,
Crystal.
I even took a token person with me who usually like causes shit. And so I look good. And she was like all calm. And she even called me yesterday. She's like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah. She lied.
The good cop, bad cop. Yeah. It was good cop, bad cop. It was bad cop. Nothing.
Yeah. Crystal is also our IOC representative on the program PRC. Review committee.
Yeah. And I love
you for all you do on the PRC.
Yeah. I love it. Thank
you. Next with our list of troublemakers, Cynthia.
Hey, look, I'm at least the one person not causing trouble yet. I need a gold star. Cynthia McCluskey, my son was in the system for many years, no longer in the system, full-time employed, doing well. I am on the board of Autism Society, but I recently stepped down as president after like 10 years. And I am a Medicaid advocate and a independent insurance broker, and happy to be here.
Hey, JB.
Hi. Hi, everyone. My name is Jamie Moore. I am adjunct faculty at Grand Canyon University. I teach pre-service teachers classes focused on how to teach children to read with a specific focus on teaching struggling readers, specifically dyslexia, students with dyslexia and other reading deficits. I also am an associate director for a group home in the West Valley, and I'm a private tutor. I travel home to home and teach students with profound dyslexia to read using a multi-sensory program. And I'm also a guardian of a young man that lives in a group home, and he is 31.
And Pam?
Hi, everybody. I'm Pam Dewey. I am a retired registered nurse. I have a six-year-old grandson who has autism. He's been a DDD All-Text member since probably age 3. And I don't know. I haven't made any trouble this week, but it's only Wednesday, so we'll see how things go.
That's all of our members. Michelle, you want to take it away with the rest of the intros, please?
Sure, Dee. Angie, would you like to start us off, pretty please?
Sure. Hi, good evening, everyone. My name is Angie Benny, and I am the CARES Bureau Chief with DDD. And I'm here, I try and come whenever I can, but Christina specifically was unable to attend tonight, so I'm attending on her behalf.
Thank you. Barb?
Oh, hold on a sec. Just for the record, Angie, do you just want to identify who Christina is?
Oh, sure.
So that it's on the record.
Absolutely. Christina Hedges, the OIFA, DDD OIFA administrator, is unable to attend this evening, so I'm filling in on her behalf.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm Barb Piccone, and I'm the Community Outreach and Program Support Administrator here in CARES, and I support a handful of areas that I know you are all very interested in. I support our community engagement team that includes our volunteer coordinators, and I also support Annette Yazzie, our tribal liaison. I think she helped you out a little bit, Dee, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. So, can we just do a big shout out for her, because I have absolutely no clue what she did, because I send these emails that say I can talk to you, I understand you can't talk to me because I HIPAA, but could you please take care of this? And I actually, because I don't have a relationship with Annette, I sent my email to Christina, who unfortunately is not with us, so she can't hear my thanks, but I did follow up and email her. And I just wanted to make sure, because it also involved access, I CC'd Angie so that if Christina needed to bring the big guns in, she could bring the big guns in. It's not because I needed Angie to make Christina do her job, because Christina always does her job. I've never heard a negative comment about Christina. So, but Barb, I appreciate it. You have a great team. Thank you very much.
Well, for handling we might have that. To get We might have to get Annette out here to talk to you all too, so you can meet her in person. I also support Nicole Palomino, who's here, and her team, which is this week. You have our Justice Reach-In team here to talk with you all, and then the next meeting we'll have our affordable housing team, which is also an area I support. So I'm happy to be here, so you kind of know the areas I cover. If you guys need anything, let me know.
Thanks, Barb, and that's a good segue for Nicole.
Hi, everyone. My name is Nicole Palomino, and I'm the specialty manager for the CARES Administration. And currently, I support the Justice Reach-In program, the affordable housing program, and I also coordinate the social work internship program.
Thank you, Nicole.
Hold on 1 minute, Nicole. Are you actually a social worker?
I'm actually an LMSW, yes.
All right. Great.
And actually, the internship program has my heart, because those are our new team going out there.
Very good. Oh, Vera, would you go next, please? Oh, yeah, she's there.
I'm here. I'm getting my camera started. So you guys can see me. I guess it's not going to work. Well, it'll pop up. Oh, there it is. Hi, guys. My name is Vera Brown Thunder. I'm a Justice Reach-In coordinator here at DDD, and I'm just here to support Nicole and Nadine.
Well, thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
And I did see Nadine. Is she still here? Or maybe I'm not. Here. Oh, okay.
Hi, everybody. Nadine and Torcia. I have presented to you once before, but I think that was like 2.5 years ago, maybe. But I am one of the Justice Reach-In coordinators, and I will be helping Nicole with the presentation today.
Thank you so much, Nadine. And Delora.
Hi, my name is Delora Grant. I'm the District West Quality Assurance Supervisor. I've been with DDD I've been with DES for like 14 years and with DDD the greater part of 12 years of that. I took a position elsewhere. I was the Quality Assurance Manager and I took a position elsewhere. And it didn't take me long to realize that my heart is with DDD and I'm back. So this is a great IOC committee. Love working with them. We have worked with them pretty much for several years. And I'm here if you ever have any questions about quality.
And just for the record, as much as we love Diane Kress, I know that when I send Delora Grant an email, it gets taken care of because she thinks that every DDD member is her personal friend. So we love us, Delora.
Thank you. I was a support coordinator for a while, and it amazes me how many of the members that we deal with in quality are previous members of mine. But even if they weren't, they are. They're all mine.
That is great. Morgan, you want to go next?
Sure. I'm Morgan O'Hara. I am the DDD Independent Oversight Committee liaison, Michelle's counterpart, with the CARES Administration.
Thank you, Morgan. And Larry?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Can you hear me? Okay, great. Thank you. My laptop is having issues, so I'm on the phone, so I'm not used to it. I don't like it. Larry Allen with Arizona Department of Administration.
Thanks, Larry. Sorry about the tech issues. I think Frederica was having issues as well with her. Yeah, she's here, but she doesn't have a voice. Sorry about that, Frederica. How about Dawn?
Hi, everybody. Can you hear me? Because yes, I'm having weird issues with my camera all day. Hi, I am Dawn McReynolds with United Healthcare OIFA, and I'm so happy to be here tonight. Missed attending these for a while.
Well, thanks for coming. Wendy.
Good evening, everyone. Wendy Herring with Mercy Care Office of Individual and Family Affairs. And I do have a fun fact I want to share. Nadine in Torsia, hopefully she's not traumatized because she was one of my son's support coordinators. I don't know if you like put two and two together, but we miss you and you are fantastic. And
I'm glad. I always get scared when somebody says that.
I should have blessed it. Nadine is awesome because, but I didn't. But it's nice to see you.
That's wonderful. I'm so glad to see you and I'm glad.
Yeah.
Hope everything's going well.
It is. Thanks.
Very cool. Small world. And my name is Michelle Rademacher. I'm a DDD Independent Oversight Committee liaison with the CARES Administration. And I don't think I missed anybody except for Callie.
Hi, everyone. I'm Callie Walling. I'm the Community Director with the Autism Society of Greater Phoenix. Thanks for letting me get on here again, just trying to learn as much as I can. Hopefully to be something like Cynthia one day, but we'll see. Thanks.
Thanks, Callie.
Callie, we all want to be Cynthia when we grow up.
So, you guys, my head is like very big. Don't do that.
So we ready for the call to the public? Callie, you're our only member of the public. If you would like to, you have the opportunity to speak at this time, and you're limited to 3 minutes. Would you like to speak, Callie?
Okay. No, I'm good.
All right, so we're done with the call to the public. Michelle, you know what I'm not seeing on here? We didn't include the update from the statewide.
Oh, no. Okay.
Where can I sneak that in?
We can sneak it in under me.
Okay, so we're going to jump to you because I want to say something at this point in time regarding conflict of interest and when we have to recuse ourselves because it was a topic that came up. So I want to do it at the beginning of the meeting. Can we do that?
Yes, give me a second. So as part of my update, that I typically update the committee on metrics. So I'll give you the metrics for January. There was a total of 830 redacted incident reports of that, and that's for January. Of that, 47 were open reports and 783 were closed reports. And that means District West was very busy in their investigations and closing out incidents for December. And then on the statewide chairs meeting was held on January 22nd. The next statewide chairs meeting will be April 23rd. The discussion from the statewide, and I'm pulling my notes up right now. Oh, there's so many folders. Okay, notes.
Well, if we can just cover this one topic at the end, you can cover the rest of them. So I just want everybody to be aware that there was an item on the agenda involving conflict of interest. It did not involve District West. It involved District East. I have no idea what goes on at District East meetings because I don't attend them. But I do know how we handle a conflict of interest in District West. If obviously I ask in the beginning of the meeting if somebody has to disclose any conflict of interest, I ask them to do that at the beginning of the meeting because the topics that we discuss are published on the agenda. The other thing that happens, just so all of you understand, the reason that Michelle is here and the reason that more, even more than Michelle, the reason that Larry Allen attends these meetings as Michelle's backstop is to make sure that we follow all the open meeting laws, including conflict of interest. So those of you who may not have been in attendance, we did have a conflict of interest a few months ago. Michelle brought it to my attention. Larry confirmed it, and we moved on. If I thought that they were wrong and it was a major issue and we couldn't work around it, the proper procedure is for someone to make a motion to ask ADOA for a ruling as to why it's a conflict of interest. Now, the reason that this is so important is because it's not Larry Allen who is the judge and jury as to whether or not something is a conflict of interest. It is Michelle Rademacher and Larry Allen as her backstop making a call in the middle of a meeting. So it's coming off the top of their head without a law library in front of them. They're using their best instincts to let us know when there's a conflict of interest, because we have to follow the open meeting laws. And if we're wrong, then Larry has to deal with our friends from the Attorney General's office. And so both Michelle and Larry take conflicts of interest very, very seriously. Here in District West, we have a very good relationship with Larry and Michelle, and we don't want them to have to spend all their time arguing with the Attorney General's office as to whether or not there's a conflict of interest. So as long as I'm your chair, we will work with them. And if there's a problem with an issue, we will table it, and I'll ask somebody to make a motion. I'll ask somebody else to second it. I'll ask for a vote. And if we feel strong enough, then we'll ask for ADOA to come up with a ruling as to what's going on. And if we don't agree with ADOA, then we'll ask the Attorney General's office. But I just want to make sure that everybody understands there's a procedure. Neither Michelle or Larry. Actually, I shouldn't say neither Michelle or Larry take it personally, because what they take personally is that they try to do a very good job. And that incident that I told you a couple months ago, that Michelle identified what could be a conflict of interest and we moved on. I actually got a phone call from both Michelle and Larry the next day, and each of them had a sleepless night because it turned out that it wasn't a conflict of interest. It didn't hinder our meeting in any way. We moved on, we did what we had to do, but they take their job very seriously. And I, on your behalf, appreciate the work that they do. So is there anything you want to add to that, Michelle or Larry?
No, that's very well spoken. Thank you, Dee.
So now we can get back to
thank you, Dave, for saying
that. Larry, you're very welcome. I just want to make sure that everybody understands why you and Michelle take this so seriously, because it's important as to why you take it so seriously. And that we do not want the Attorney General on our case. So, and hopefully everybody got the email from Larry. We all have to do our conflict of interest training because we have to do it annually, right, Larry?
Correct.
It's an annual training. Huh?
It's an annual training, yes.
And it's coming up because we all did it around the same time. So we all need to do it again.
Yep.
So if you can send us the directions and the password, we will all do it so that we'll all be in compliance. We appreciate it. So our first presentation, Michelle, next on our list, it's our justice liaison presentations, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay, and Nicole's going to do that for us.
Me and Nadine are going to.
Okay, ladies, it's all yours. Thank you.
So, good evening, everyone. We did introductions, but we actually have three justice liaisons, and Nadine and Vera are both here. And we have one more, Hector, who's not present today. So the Justice Region Care Coordination Program falls under the CARES Administration, and Angie is our bureau chief, and for our administrator is Barb Piconi, and we fall under the Outreach and Program Support, which includes DDD affordable housing benefits, community engagement, Justice Region, the social work internship program, our tribal liaison, and the volunteer coordinators. So on October 1st, 1916, DDD's contract with Access was modified to add the Justice Region Care Coordination Program, which is a national program as directed by the CMS. Every managed care organization throughout the United States is required to participate in this program. So the Justice Region Care Coordination Program, the contract requirements for Access is where the single point of contact within DDD for the justice system stakeholders. We facilitate the transition of DDD all techs and targeted members from jails to prisons back into the community. And Access suspends eligibility while a member is incarcerated, but then it's reactivated once they discharge from the facility. And upon release, All right, I'm going to turn it over to Nadine now.
All right. Hi again, everybody. Once again, my name is Nadine Antorcia, and I am one of the three justice coordinators within DDD. And I'm going to pick up with what we do that goes above and beyond our contract requirements. So because DDD is the ever overachievers that we are, we focus on care coordination for all of our incarcerated DDD eligible members and those for court involvement for criminal matters as well. We ensure individuals have continuity of care and seamless access to needed services when they are released from jails and prisons. And we help prevent members from, we help prevent members from being terminated and having gaps in services upon release.
And okay, Nadine, take a drink if you need one.
Okay. I'm so sorry. It's been a long day.
We're really not scary people, I promise.
I do this all the time. I don't know why I'm hiccuping. It's fine. And our goal is to help reduce repeat offenses. The new policy 1022 was published for use, and these are some highlights from it. So what we ask for: support coordination shall acknowledge the incarceration notification upon receipt from the justice system liaison and update the members' records. Support coordinators shall follow up with the justice system liaison to provide case updates, including release or court date information. And support coordination shall change member status to suspend or inactive, as it is now. It used to be suspended many years ago, when a member has been incarcerated for 30 days longer with no anticipated release date. Yes.
Yeah, Nadine. When do you actually get involved with the DDD member? Is it after arrest or is it after adjudication?
It is after arrest.
Okay.
So DDD eligible status. So DDD eligibility status. So DDD does not terminate members' focus eligibility if the member becomes incarcerated. The persistent and service planning meeting requirement is halted while the member remains incarcerated. And then when the member remains incarcerated for more than 30 days and is not anticipated to release soon, the member will be suspended in focus. So Justice Reach-In works within the DDD planning team setting. We assist the team with collaborating with jails, sheriff's office, correctional health services, Department of Corrections, community supervision and probation. We also will work with the health plans and behavioral health contractors within the team setting. Yes.
So one of the things that I keep hearing that I don't see listed on this slide is that you guys also work with law enforcement. Is that true or not?
No, we do not.
You do not?
No.
Do you know anyone that does within your guys'
team? Barb has her hand up and she can answer that further. Sorry. Barb, are you muted?
As I'm rattling on, I'm double muted. I'm not sure if at some point we've shared this with you all, but we have a brand new position here within DDD. Molly Bradley Reich started with us last year, I want to say in April. And so we actually created a position to develop a curriculum for law enforcement and for corrections. For corrections, they are jails, our prisons, our juvenile detention. Oh, go ahead, Cynthia.
What is her actual qualification to be doing that?
Her qualification to do this? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Molly came from, she worked for a law enforcement entity in Maui along the same line. So she has a background and she actually came to Arizona and her role has been in, she spent some time in support coordination. And so it's more of information about people with IDD. And maybe I shouldn't say curriculum, but she's going to be doing presentation. So like now, I think you guys are all aware that we do an AAC presentation to the law enforcement community. Are you all aware of that? That Kirk team was doing. So it's going to be similar to what they're all doing in regards to that communication aspect, where this is more about when you initially go out to a call, what you can expect when you go out to a call and working with our folks that qualify for DDD. Now, we did during this last year, Molly came on in April, so she's been doing a lot of research. We've been working with our health plans. We met with staff from Mercy Care. We met with staff from United. We spent time talking to some of our law enforcement community to help us in the development of this. So I don't know.
I'm highly concerned about this position. I got to tell you, I'm pretty hostile. So not to you personally, but to DDD's arrogance to think that they can design things without participating with what's already out there.
We already have some really good assets
that have been doing that for a long time. Like Diana Davis Wilson and Nancy Martinez. And there's also some really great trained CIT training officers. So I'm just going to ask you to take back that it would be great if DDD could do a better job of pulling in resources that already exist instead of inventing your own.
Absolutely. And Cynthia, I don't know, we actually early on, I know Molly had attempted to reach out to you because I know you were very much immersed in that Be Safe. And so I don't know if Molly Bradley Reich triggers your memory, but I would love to have her connect with you, because we don't want to go off on our own and go off on a tangent. We know there's things already in place that we want to connect to. And Molly's worked hard the last few months to do that. That's why we're really a little bit close to we haven't laid this out. This is not something that we finalized. We're working hard to get as much feedback as we can. I do want, if you're open to it, for her to connect with you, but that's kind of what we've been doing the last few months. And the reason why we're doing this, we were initially, we received a memo from Access. Gosh, I think it's been not, what year are we in? I think it was October of 2023. And it was basically like, DDD, you need to do better and work.
Based off of some of the committees I was on. So if I can just let you know that we're doing a Be Safe. It's not really a train the trainer, but it's like similar to that concept. And the national trainer is going to be in town February 21st and 22nd. Okay. And I would be willing to have her attend on the cost of Autism Society so that she could see that. And there will be law enforcement there being trained as well. So maybe we can follow up later in regards to that. I think that would be helpful.
Yeah. And Cynthia, it's
just that I don't know why law enforcement's going to be that warm and fuzzy about her. You know, they like to be trained by their own people kind of thing. I appreciate what you guys are trying to do, but I do have some concerns. But maybe if you and I can circle back tomorrow.
Absolutely. You know what? I'll send you an email now. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to send it to you and Molly so I can make that introduction. And then we can get those conversations going.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Okay, Cynthia, thank you. I think I answered what we needed. Can we bounce back to the presentation?
All right. So Justice Reachin works with.
Hold on a sec. Before you jump back in, the one thing that I'm not seeing on your justice partners, and you have to forgive me because I've never practiced law in Arizona, only in New York. Do the criminal defense attorneys have an association? Do you work with them?
We actually do have a pretty good relationship with the defense teams in Maricopa County. We've partnered with them 3 times now and done presentations with their offices on our program. So they know our members pretty well. They have their own unit in Maricopa County for our population. And we actually get notified by them quite frequently that our member's been incarcerated.
Can you add them to your slide for the next presentation? Just don't forget them because it's an important sheet.
I can, but there's a caveat to that because this is specific to like when they're incarcerated and getting that going. And these are people that we can speak to without a HIPAA release. For us to have a defense attorney involved, we have to have a HIPAA release. And this is mostly for coordination from jails and prisons back into the community and vice versa. But we absolutely do communicate with them when necessary. And when we have HIPAA releases, we involve them in on the planning teams as well. Yes, Cynthia.
Thank you, Dee, for bringing that up. So I would like to just do a follow-up for something for you guys to think about, which is doing some more education around judges, because we see some extreme discrimination with judges against our population. I forget what you call them right now, the name is like escaping me, but the attorneys that represent you when you can't afford to represent yourself, what are they called again?
The public defender's office.
Public defender's office. Like I know there's some really good ones that advocate for our families within there, but I think that needs to be a partnership too, because wouldn't it be nice if we educated them before they went to jail?
Yeah, they actually helped develop this presentation, the public defender's office, we did a whole extra presentation that was presented to the public defender's conference. We've also presented in collaboration with one of the judges, Nicole, I can't quite remember her name, but we have a really good partnership with their area as well. Mostly in Maricopa County, we're working on the other areas, but that is our biggest population. So,
Yeah, we presented at the, I believe it was called the Arizona State Bar Convention.
Yes.
Where they all get a bunch of continuing education and stuff. So we did that at Wild Horse Pass just this past year.
Awesome. Any further questions? I don't want to jump back in if we're still going. I'm good with waiting. Okay, so we do work within the DDD planning team setting to assist with collaborating with these partners. Support coordination is going to remain that main point of contact for the team. So they're going to be the ones talking to the guardians and all the regular team members. And so we would talk to all of the justice partners on the back end and kind of coordinate that in between, if that makes sense. When a member becomes incarcerated, we reach out to support coordinators to get what we need to connect with these partners on the planning team's behalf. And so what we ask for is when reaching care coordination activities begin upon knowledge of a member's incarceration or court involvement. Once again, for criminal reasons, there are lots of different courts, so we want to specify it's specifically if they're at risk for incarceration. It continues until a member no longer has justice involvement and they are stable in the community. And then when behavioral health needs are identified, we also collaborate within the members team setting with those behavioral health contractors to make sure that they are complying with any court order treatments and making sure that they're getting the services they need to be successful when they're out in the community. So what we ask from support coordination is within 24 hours of receiving notification that their member has been incarcerated or once again has court involvement for a criminal matter, to send an email to the justice system liaisons at our inbox. We ask them to include the member's full name, their date of birth, the dates of their member's incarceration, if they know them, the release of information, enabling us to share information with detention facilities, last HIPAA from their PCSP will work, current medication list, so we can make sure they're getting their medications while they're incarcerated, and any pertinent information related to the incarceration so that we can kind of get up to speed. Same thing goes for us. If we find out before support coordination does, we're going to notify them as soon as possible, request that information. That communication is really important to making sure that we meet the access requirement for tracking member recidivism rates. Emails from support coordination to justice liaisons go back and forth all the time within this process. So we're going to talk about care collaboration now. So that contact and coordination with the justice liaisons to determine anticipated release dates, next court dates. Those anticipated release dates and next court dates do need to be documented in the member's case file. We want to make sure we're communicating updates to everybody, including invitations to meetings. We do go to member meetings while this process is going on. We want to get our updates in real time instead of having to hound people to get that information. We'd like to ask right where we can. Also, all of the health plans have to meet the same access requirement for justice reach-in. So they also have health plans that will attend those meetings with us as well to help with coordinating on the behavioral health type. After notification, we continue to collaborate with support coordination until there is no more court involvement. So no more court dates, no more probation. And the member is stable in the community. Once the team considers that member stable in the community, the case is then presented to a leadership committee for approval for release from the justice reach-in program. Yes.
One of the things that I'm hearing a lot from the prison system is the amount of people with IDD that ended up there without having any services or being connected to the system. Somehow they fell through the cracks. Mm-hmm. Is there any work on trying to identify those members and seeing what could be done to assist them?
So we meet with Access, all of the health plans, and most of the probation and facilities once a month or once a quarter. And they are now getting to where they are aware of our unit. And a lot of our notifications also come from the facilities themselves. So we will even get questions like, hey, is this one of your members? And sometimes it's not, but the team, the release planning teams, especially within Maricopa County, now we're getting pretty good with the Department of Corrections as well, to where they're noticing, hey, this person might have a disability and they're reaching out.
Yes.
And we have a really good partnership with Adobe Mountain School.
Yes, that too.
The psychologist there, she's really passionate about our members. I know we probably have two kiddos there right now, but she's so passionate about our kids, and we have a really good third
because she helped one get eligible for DDD. Her and I collaborated to make sure that that member got services in place. So DDD is now following a member because of Adobe Mountain. So, Pam?
Yeah, thank you. You said, did I hear correctly? There's three justice liaisons?
Yes.
And what's the caseload like? What kind of numbers are we talking about?
So right now we have about 170 members total. 35 of those are incarcerated. 5 of those are juveniles. And so the ones that are not incarcerated are the ones that still have ongoing court involvement or have not reached a level of stability to where we can discontinue monitoring of them.
Okay. Wow, that's a lot of people.
Yes. There used to historically only be one support coordinator, or not support coordinator, justice reaching coordinator. And then the population, once we started doing education, it just tripled. And we ended up having to hire 2 more people for this role. And we even had an admin for a little while to help us with the caseload as well.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So on the justice reach-in coordinator role, once we're notified, we become part of that care coordination team. We help track the progression of the DDD members' justice involvement, so court cases, probation, diversion program. We communicate with the justice stakeholders who are involved with the members' cases. We facilitate release planning for members scheduled for an upcoming release. We help with housing, making sure that they have a PCP visit after they get out, services, all that. And we'll talk more about the release planning process in a minute. And we also communicate with Access and notify Access of the members' incarceration. We have frequent contact with support coordination teams, and there's frequent monitoring of court schedules, case updates for adults. Juveniles are not public information, so we rely on support coordination teams for those updates. Some adult cases are also not public information. We have a few federal cases, so we also rely on support coordination for those. Our unit relies solely on public information for what information we can receive unless we have a contact that can give us that information. The care coordination team, I talked about that already, I'm sorry. This is a new slide, so I haven't learned it yet. A big thing, do not terminate members. DDD does not close people from being incarcerated. So if the member's incarcerated beyond 30 days, we're gonna reach out to support coordination with additional instructions. It looks like this. This is what the focus screen looks like. Our procedure notes, they've been incarcerated for 30 days. There's no anticipated release date or it's not coming up anytime soon. We have a few that have, they're gonna be there for 10 years or so. The case changes to suspended or inactive in focus. This temporarily removes the member from the DDD required meeting rules while the member is incarcerated. Teams may continue to meet for CFTs, ART meetings, staffings, all of that stuff, but the DDD planning meeting requirement would not need to be completed. And we have more information on that down the way too. Our court policy, DDD procedure states that division staff do not appear on a member's behalf in court unless a subpoena has been submitted through the Office of the Attorney General. Division staff may attend hearings as a general member of the public, but cannot go and represent that member. Division staff also generally do not go to the detention facilities or hold those planning meetings while a member is incarcerated. Services are not provided while a member is incarcerated. There is no need for a visit. The jails have really limited resources for visitation, so those requests need to be limited to emergencies only. Release planning. Any questions before I move on to release planning? I thought I saw someone. Yes.
Yeah, I have a question. As a former defense attorney, I don't understand. I don't understand when somebody is incarcerated before they're adjudicated.
Mm-hmm.
Why you wouldn't meet with them to make sure, especially what concerns me is that there are individuals who, first of all, it blows my mind that a DDD Altex member who has a guardian mm-hmm. would even be incarcerated and held criminally liable in the first place. And I understand I live in Arizona, I don't live in New York, but what I don't understand, what I don't understand when they're incarcerated but not adjudicated, I spent a decade dealing with the probation departments in New York on behalf of my clients who had juvenile delinquency charges pending.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very important to make sure that they have the appropriate supports and services available to them, because it makes all the difference mm-hmm. when you're talking about placement, whether mm-hmm. the judge is going to ship them off to a detention facility or to jail or prison, or is going to allow them to come into the community with the right supports and services. And I don't know how you can determine whether or not those things are available, especially with the defense attorney. So I don't get why there isn't normally that visit. I think we're missing a very important step here.
So the person-centered planning is to plan for services, and access coverage services are suspended. So there's no access at all while a member's incarcerated. So that's one of the reasons is that service, that visit would not be covered because access is not involved. So that visit has to do with an access requirement. The other issue is, from what I've been informed, is if we provide more information than what we are told we can provide, that can be used against them in the courts because the jails can provide that information against them. I don't have all of the information, but we do coordinate behind the scenes. The health plans have permission to go and meet with them. DDD does not. So there are people meeting with them. It's just not us.
Okay, here's what I don't understand. You told us at the beginning of your presentation, the whole reason that we have this program is because DDD is an MCO. So what separates DDD from Mercy Care and UHC Community Plan? Especially since DDD is the one that provides the HCBS services that are so vital
mm-hmm.
that the judge is going to look at as to whether or not these individuals should be in a detention center or to be incarcerated. Either you're an MCO and you have to play by the same rules and you have the same abilities as United Healthcare and Mercy Care that provide HCBS services for EPD Altex members, or you're not. I mean, you can't have it both ways.
So,
and I don't mean you individually. I don't mean to sound like I'm coming after you. But I
can tell you what our process is. We do a really good job of coordinating. There are very few members that we are not able to coordinate a release for. Other than that, Barb can maybe hopefully answer some more of those questions.
Well, I was just going to say, one of the reasons, and I let the team know as we were coming out to meet with you all, because if I'm not mistaken, when you all asked for this presentation, there was someone on the committee that had some experiences and may have wanted to give some feedback. So one of the things I shared with the team is, you know, obviously we're doing things a certain way, but we want to hear what you all have to say too. So some of this that we obviously do things a certain way. We do it because people tell us to do it, and the higher ups tell us to do it, and access tells us to do it. But you're posing really good questions that I feel like we want to definitely take those back and say, you know, it would make sense. And maybe they can clarify more as to why we can't, right? Or maybe there's some dialogue about maybe we can. So just putting that out there. Having this discussion, I don't want Navy to be stumped because some of
I
it
can
is
answer
little...
specifically yeah. for Maricopa County. It's the facilities that grant the permission. It's not
access that grants the permission. And we applied for permission for visitation and were denied because the health plans already have access to that number. But that's that specific entity. I don't know globally, but that's my experience. That's all I can share.
Yeah,
and so we're making a list of questions, right?
Yes. Yes.
That we can look into a little more.
Just to make it really clear, you heard in our introductions, you got a bunch of people that are really passionate. So,
oh, I know, and I'm not take it personally. I have to hold my tongue, or I will say things that will get me in trouble. So,
we don't want you to get in trouble. we do not want you to get in trouble.
And we appreciate the feedback because we really love
our program. Nothing bothers me more than saying I can't answer that question. That is my biggest.
It's just especially, even though it was 30 years ago, it's especially sticks in my craw because I can't tell you how many juveniles that I represented in family court. Mm-hmm. In New York, we don't send them to criminal court. We take care of it in family court if they're 16 and younger. And especially in the counties that I practiced in because they were more rural areas. And so we really tried to help them before they had to spend time in jail and prison as an 18 or a 21-year-old. So I just know how important it is. And I know how important DDD supports and services can be for our members. So it's just very frustrating. So please don't take anything that we're saying.
Not at all. I just want to be able to do more. And I'm a DDD mom too, so I have a lot of passion in there.
We appreciate the feedback because that's all we want to do is improve our justice program. We want to prevent recidivism. We want to make sure that members have behavioral health services for them as soon as they're out and there's no wait time. There's just, if I had a magic wand, but
that's where all the release planning starts and that's where we're going. And it's not perfect, but hopefully we can get there. All right. So release planning, part of our access contract is probably the main part of our access contract that is facilitated by the justice liaisons. When the justice team is notified of an anticipated release date, we initiate the release planning process. Sometimes we don't know there's going to be a release date, so we start release planning from the moment we're informed. The planning team will assess and assist with members' housing, services, transportation, and medication needs. The planning team is going to consist of their regular DDD team, so any guardians, service providers, behavioral health teams. We'll also have your justice liaisons, sometimes public defenders, probation officers are there. Very frequently, we will have a representative from the facility present as well to answer any additional questions and help us get some of the medical information we need. We also assist with coordinating medical, dental, and behavioral health appointments. Division staff are required to ensure the member has a PCP appointment scheduled within 7 days of their release from incarceration. This should be all in place and scheduled before they get out. Then once that member gets out, their eligibility should automatically reinstate within 3 business days, backdated to the date of their release. The only time that does not happen is if they were incarcerated past their access renewal date. At that point, they would need to reapply, but we would usually catch that during the release planning meeting. We track the renewal dates, and we can get that application in up to 30 days before their release, and Access is working on getting that extended up to 90 days right now. Preventing recidivism. So that communication is really important. We want to ask some big questions. What led up to the incarceration? What can we do to support our members so they are not reoffending? Are there any services, skills, or coping mechanisms the member could learn that could help them? We want to communicate updates to all team members. Yes.
I'm very excited about this slide.
It gets better.
But
all the boring stuff's over. Now I get to talk.
but I'm just wondering, And maybe you're going to say this, and maybe I'm too early, mm-hmm. but what is DDD doing to educate families and parents regarding these issues? Because it seems like families get into trouble and they were unaware or weren't paying attention or didn't see the rest. So I'm just wondering, what are you guys doing to educate support coordination, working with their members?
This is the actual presentation that we give to support coordination. So you're receiving the education that support coordinators get right now.
But I mean, what are you doing to educate the families? Like, do you have a different presentation for families?
Our unit is not in a member-facing role. That's why support coordination has to be present when we meet with behavioral health teams and members. So Barb might be able to answer more about the community part, because she oversees the community outreach program.
Oh my goodness, that's a loaded question. A lot of times in these instances when we have members, we may notice, like sometimes you might have someone who maybe there's not an arrest, but maybe they're getting the cops, the group home is seeing, you know, they're having to call the police, which they shouldn't be doing. We know they shouldn't be doing, but the members crossing paths with law enforcement, but law enforcement isn't, you know, fortunately at that given moment, they're not arresting the member. We like to know about those types of things. So when we're made aware, and this is the thing too, this team is trying so hard to get information to the field staff because, you know, you see, we have 170 members that we're monitoring across the state. We have 58,000 members. So even support coordinators don't have a lot of experience. You know, every now and then they might have a member who all of a sudden is getting in trouble, maybe he's incarcerated, maybe has court hearings, and they look to us for that advisement. So what we like to see as well is when you have someone that's at risk or there's some contacts with law enforcement, that we hope that they're proactive and that they do reach out to us, because we, anytime there's court involvement or, you know, any type of law enforcement involvement, we'd like to know about it and get in there and we can do some advising. But we also like to know that the team is out there. You know, we have wonderful teams. We have great support coordinators. We have great complex care managers and behavioral health staff. And we hope they're kind of out there doing some of that proactive, right, as opposed to reactive, which I feel sometimes we do a lot of. I don't know if that answers your question, but
it does. I would love to see two things. One, I would love to see you guys tracking and trending data on some of this stuff. I can tell you Autism Society has been running a safety quarterly education for all families, trying to get them attend. And we talk about safety for all ages and stages. The Homeland Security has a really good training program. I've yet to be able to get them to do it here in Maricopa County, but there's a lot of ways the higher functioning, especially individuals, DDD members, can find themselves being arrested for like child porn by accident. I mean, a lot of things. And I would like to see more education to families from support coordination about that. And let me just tell you, families don't want to hear anything about uncomfortable subjects. It's hard to get them to come to training for those kinds of things, but it's something that's really important and has to happen. And you guys, not you in particular, but your organization is the closest mechanism to move that needle. Mm-hmm. So I just think more has to be done. Like, you guys are doing a great job, but if you don't have support coordinators doing more and having better education and maybe more training around that, I'd like frankly to see you guys out of a job. Right, like, wouldn't that be nice if we didn't need you?
A second to realize what you were saying, and then I was like, I agree with that.
Can I tell you, I end every single presentation to support coordination by saying, I hope I don't hear from any of you anytime soon. that's how I end every single one, and they all roll their eyes, but it's funny to me. So
yeah. Angie, did you have a thought?
Well, I agree with Cynthia that, you know, we absolutely support coordination is the first line of defense when it comes to meeting the families and building a plan around that individual to ensure that not only are they safe, but they're living a good quality life, right? But just to kind of tell you one more thing that we're doing on the proactive side of the house, I don't know if you guys have heard of that Blue Envelope program. Through ADOT, we're actually going to partner with ADOT, and they're coming out to train support coordinators on the blue, on the option to have individuals to offer the Blue Envelope program and the paperwork to families should an individual want to get a driver's license. So that way, if they do get pulled over, they're not at risk for getting incarcerated because they're not complying with the police officer, right? So that is one thing that we're doing that's proactive. But I know that that's one piece of the many reasons why somebody could get arrested. But you know, making sure that families have, they take the positive behavior support training, so that way it prevents situations that could lead to domestic violence. You know, those types of things are happening. We're partnering with Raising Special Kids for parents to be trained in positive behavior support. And then, of course, support coordination should be doing good referrals and working with the behavioral health entities to ensure that individuals get those wraparound supports.
So. Maybe I should think about partnering with SARC. They have a really good online training for families about like the dangers of all. So first of all, we know that people are being sex trafficked in our community, and that's happening from online. Mm-hmm. And the only organization I know that has a good training around that is SARC.
But that's definitely I'm assuming that's an acronym. Cynthia, can you
No, it's Southwest Autism Research and
Resource. Southwest Autism Research and Resource Center. Wow. SARRC.
Got it. Thanks.
Because I think that, you know, I love the Blue Envelope program, and I think some of that stuff is great, but the dangers that our community is facing from online predators is just giant. Mm-hmm. So I would just think about that. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
And we have another question.
Yeah. Hey, Angie, while you're working with DPS on the Blue Envelope project, have you thought about partnering with somebody? And unfortunately, I don't know who you would at this point, but partnering with somebody to get family stickers for their front doors that say somebody with autism lives here, or somebody with a developmental disability lives here, who you may be nonverbal, may use an AAC, whatever. And also for cars, because I can tell you from personal experience, my husband got pulled over, and it was the Arizona Autism Coalition sticker on the back of the car that alerted law enforcement. Our son Andy had autism, and it was a very different approach from the officer. First of all, they sent the female officer, and she must have had CIT training because she was great, because of course my husband had me on the phone while the whole thing was going on because I wasn't in the car, but it made a big difference.
So. Sure. That's a great suggestion.
I would add that because Autism Society isn't a fan of stickers necessarily. Mm-hmm. Like the Autism Coalition one is probably a safer sticker to have. But some people are using those stickers like in a way that could make them vulnerable for attack. So one thing to think about is seatbelt covers so that they can see it when they come up on the car, or if there's an accident, they see that person's nonverbal. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of things that we could be talking about. Like I said, Autism Society has our Safety 101 class, and we would definitely invite someone from DDD or you guys to just come check it out. And then maybe you guys could give us ideas on how it can improve it. And maybe some of our stuff would be helpful to you guys.
And I think all of those things are great, in addition to the work that we hope that Molly can start, when she can start getting out there and collaborating and meeting with precincts to educate the law enforcement, right? Because that, I mean, we have to tackle it from both ends, right? Lots of things can happen in a family home that are out of everybody's control, but how an officer responds can make all the difference in that person's in that person's everything, right? The rest of their life, their trauma, you know, that kind of thing. So we have to kind of tackle it from both sides. But I love the suggestions. I love the seatbelt cover suggestion as well. So thank you.
Yeah, seatbelt cover is much better than sticker. I totally agree. Do we have any more questions? There's more, because I think we,
I'm running out of time.
I think we may want to make a motion. So let me know when you're finished and I'll ask whether or not we have a motion and a vote.
So utilizing crisis services is what we talk about a lot with support coordination. Oh, I'm sorry. Were you not talking to me? I feel like somebody just told me to stop. So many of our members have justice involvement as a result of families and providers calling 911 instead of contacting their behavioral health crisis teams in times of escalating behavioral issues. Police officers, as we know, are not always trained in crisis intervention and how to deal with individuals with developmental disabilities. So these situations often end in an arrest. In order to reduce police involvement and subsequent incarcerations, we should be working as teams to develop those at-risk crisis plans and ensuring that families and providers have the numbers for those crisis teams. And then we do a little plug for 988. Access worked with state and federal partners to launch 988. It replaced the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. It went live in 2022. So much like America uses 911 for emergencies, 988 is the 3-digit phone number for mental health crises. And there is more information on the 988 website, or support coordination should be able to help families get that as well if they need it. So justice reach-in coordinators, we utilize public information to obtain updates. Juvenile justice records and some adult records are not public information, so the justice coordinators do rely on support coordination teams for updated information in these situations. If we don't have a good contact, like we just recently got somebody down in Nogales, so if we don't have a good contact with that facility already, the families will usually get looped in pretty fast and they help us. Hopefully there's a family or a guardian involved. Justice reach-in coordinators do not file police reports. And once again, we do not testify in court, represent members in court. No DDD staff is able to do that. If a member cannot appear in court in person, transportation to court is not an access covered service. We do have some resources that we can provide to the members for transportation, or the member or their guardian can reach out to the court and ask if a virtual option is available. Items that would need to go to the Office of Administrative Review instead of justice reach-in would be legal matters that are not criminal matters, court orders, communications with attorneys, requests for legal representation, et cetera. DDD staff attending a court hearing, maybe somebody got a subpoena emailed to them, they need to reach out to OAR. Filing police reports, jury duty, guardianship, and immigration questions. And that is it for our presentation. Are there any additional questions? I'm sorry, I got a little weird.
No additional questions. I'm wondering if there's any motions that we would like to make. Maybe a motion that DDD Justice Reach-In meet with the DDD member and their defense attorney to discuss any available appropriate supports and services before plea or adjudication to help with the potential sentencing or disposition options for consideration by probation and or the judge. Is that a motion anybody wants to make?
I'll make the motion, Dee.
And do we have a second on the motion?
I can second it.
Okay, and we'll do a voice vote. Are there any nays? Okay, then we'll do a voice vote for yays. I can't vote. So.
Yeah.
Yay.
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 Okay, so Michelle, are we okay? We have a majority of yays, so the motion passes. Are there any other motions that anybody wants to make? Crystal?
I just have a question about the transportation. Do people have trouble getting to the courts?
Not usually. Very, very rarely we get somebody that says, hey, can you take us to court? And most of the time it's in Maricopa County, and we are able to provide them with a bus pass or another resource to get them there. A lot of our members actually live in group homes, so the group home is able to transport them, and the other majority that we have reside in a family home with family members. It's not very often that we have members that live on their own or not, but we do try to support them where we can.
Okay. Would it be helpful if you guys could get into the jails and prisons as DDD?
I mean, it kind of depends, because they don't have to follow the same policies that we do. So it's a very different, like, we can ask all we want, but not usually, because the most that we would need is a signature or like, hey, we want to know if this is a good option. And the health plans are able to get that for us when they meet with the members, because they do have to meet with them in person. And so that's why we collaborate with them so closely. And we're meeting with them at least 3 times a month and doing all of this release planning with everybody, so that everybody is working on the same thing and we're not all doing different things.
Okay. And it seems like you guys are able to keep up on when people are being released. Mercy Care is doing an okay job at getting that information.
Yeah.
Or whoever the provider is.
Yeah, we work with Mercy Care, United Healthcare, and all of the targeted health plans as well. And we meet with them all every single month. And actually, we're meeting about every other week right now with all of them and our Access administrators from Access directly.
I always like to add that our counterparts at United and Mercy Care, they're great. They are really passionate about our members just as much as we are. So, I mean, it's Paula at Mercy Care and Mary at United, and they're just warriors for the members. So it is a great relationship we have with them.
So just so that I'm understanding this last slide, Nicole, Hector, Nadine, and Vera report to you. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And
Vera's our person. We're District West.
Yes, I actually, when I came on, I distributed it. I switched it around a little bit and designated the liaisons to different districts, also so they could build relationships with the support coordination teams.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. So just so that everybody knows, Vera's our person. So I don't want to scare Vera, but she's our person.
No worries. I welcome all the feedback. I can share my email address with you all. If you have any questions, feel free to send me an email regarding any cases in District West. Or the best thing to do is to send an email to the justice inbox in case I'm not in. And then Nadine and Hector can cover for me. But yes.
To tell you the truth, Vera, what we do is we send an email to Christina Hedges.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. Let's, yes. And send then, it to Christina.
And then we ask her to contact you.
Definitely CC the mailbox if you can remember it. If Christina's out, at least we know we have people monitoring this box. And when it's a situation like this, it's pretty urgent. Oh,
trust me, if it's a if it's an ASAP situation.
Oh, everyone's getting called.
You're getting CC'd.
Of course.
We're just, you know, I mean, we're just skipping over everybody else and going straight to you if it's got to be done ASAP. So not that your people don't do their job, because they do. But when you contact other agencies, it carries more weight than when they do. So. Okay, Michelle, what's next on our, I don't have the agenda in front of me. It's updates, right?
Yes, unless you have discussion on any incident reports or behavior plans.
Okay, Barb's got her hand up.
Yeah, just if it's okay with you all, myself and the justice team are going to hop off, but we are going, actually Nicole and I will see you again next month with Megan Akins, our affordable housing supervisor. So you're going to see us 2 months in a row. And if you don't need anything else, we're going to sign off.
Oh yeah, and just so everybody knows, we can always email Barb.
Always. If I don't have the answer, you know I can direct you to the right person.
I don't mean to leave you out. It's just.
Thank you. I don't take offense. It's okay.
Angie's position is, what do you call Angie? An associate director?
I'm the CARES Bureau Chief.
CARES Bureau Chief. Okay. That holds a lot more weight than.
Yes. And Angie's my boss. So you can always. I'll reach out to my boss.
Well, it's got nothing to do with anybody's work performance. Yeah. It's when she has to deal with another agency, especially our friends at DCS.
And so, you all know what I'm connected to. So if anything comes up that I oversee directly, and everyone else, absolutely shoot me an email.
We appreciate it, Barb.
Okay. You all take care until next month.
Thank you.
Bye.
Hi. Does anybody have any incident reports or policy issues that they'd like to discuss? Okay, we ready for updates? Take it away, Michelle.
Okay, sure. Delora, do you have an update from District West? Mm-hmm. Quality.
Just as I was going to talk, my AI started talking. Sorry. I had to silence her. Yes. So for District West for January numbers, and you already talked about them a little bit, we entered 823 incidents and we have had 10 deaths reported for January, which is a little concerning. It just seems like that's been going up a little bit. Also, a quality management bulletin came out and it's talking about incident reporting and process changes. And there was a survey that was sent to the, I'm sorry.
Hey, Delora.
Go ahead.
Cynthia and I look at each of those death reports.
Mm-hmm.
They get sent to us. And even though it's concerning that we've lost 10 people in January. Unfortunately, January is usually a big month for deaths. I didn't see anything suspicious.
No, I didn't see anything suspicious either. It just breaks my heart.
So I just want on the record that we, besides you looking at it, we are also looking at it, and I'm assuming the deaths that I looked at seem to be natural causes, every one of them. But it to really break your heart, involved individuals with chronic healthcare concerns that unfortunately may have contracted an illness. Several of them were actually at hospitals. which they may have arrived at the hospital for a different reason.
Right.
But picked up an infection or a virus.
Yes. No, we look at every death very carefully and examine it and get documentation. And yes. Cynthia?
I just wanted to mention, you know, we are doing we have a committee that's meeting about getting access to better primary care for the DDD members, especially in group homes. And one of the research studies that we were looking at shows that there's just an increased mortality rate for autism alone. It's like, I think it said that you're going to die 20 years younger than a peer without autism. So I think, you know, there has to be something to do with that. And I wonder if DDD tracks and trends the reason people die, like looking at health data at all.
So there is an individual who does do tracks and trends on deaths with the quality management unit. And I'm sure that, you know, you understand that deaths are taken very seriously. And
Deborah, does that individual report to Dr. Loki?
Yes. Yes. And Dr. Loki looks at all of that.
Yeah, she joined us a couple months ago. Mm-hmm.
Right. I was here when she was here.
Just to put on the record historically, Cynthia, the 20-year longevity difference is actually less than it was 40 years ago for all individuals with developmental disabilities. The gap was much higher. One of the things that DDD is dealing with that they've never dealt with really in the past is DDD members who are seasoned citizens.
It's going to be an interesting transition. And I'm sure there's a lot of challenges. I know that I've heard from families about skilled nursing and some of that stuff being available for our population is difficult. But I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to say that, you know, we're gonna see that trend anyways, just because they're at higher risk of death for whatever reason.
Well, and just all of the things that people are catching, like Dee said, in the hospital, you go into the hospital and there's a lot of serious illness there. So, yes. So then another report, as far as the incident reporting process change, the division sent out a survey to vendors regarding the Access QM portal. And I know we've been talking about that for quite a while. And they got 225 responses that they received. 205 of them were from qualified vendors, which is 182 unique vendors, and 20 from DDD staff. The comments were regarding when they thought that the vendors could be able to start entering in the Access portal. And some of the comments that were provided, they were requesting training. They had questions on the QM portal functionality and implementation, and the questions for the rationale and reason for the proposed change, and comments on how it might increase their administrative burden. So we're working with the vendors right now to try to implement that process change. Does anyone have any questions for me?
No, we appreciate it, Delora. Please just let us know when we're finally going to get a real database so that the talented members of your team can actually track and trend properly. I know you guys do it by hand, and it is a Herculean task, just like redacting incident reports by hand is a Herculean task. So hopefully we'll get it. I mean, it's been promised for 5+ years.
It's coming. So, It's coming.
I mean, it's a miracle that they're all using the same incident reporting form. That only took us how many years?
That is true. That is very true. But yes, we do appreciate that, the standardized form, because we know exactly where we are looking for information on what page. And although it went from one page to 12 page to get it, but.
Yeah, but the 12 pages, the information that they're looking for is very important, especially since these are things that CMS is very particular about. Especially including, I mean, how many pages of that 12 pages involves medication and medication errors? So.
Correct. Or death. There's a section in there on death, or yes. So it is helpful. I do believe we get a lot more information now with the standardized form and with the longer form. We do get a lot more information. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you. Angie, I know you're here for Christina, but also you attend these meetings as well. Did you have an update?
Sure. Well, it's been a busy week for DDD. So last week we wrapped up our final strategic planning listening sessions, and we closed out the survey. So now they're in the process of collecting all that data, combining all that data, looking for trends, and then they're looking to report out in June on their findings, that planning committee. So that happened and wrapped up. And then we just started town halls. The public town halls are this week. We had one this morning, our first one, and we had over 500 folks on the call. And we have another one scheduled for tomorrow night. So if you all have not had an opportunity to participate or attend, you may want to. We will also have meetings scheduled next week to talk specifically about budget and growth, that are they're designated times to talk about those things, and Zane will be presenting next week twice, I think one in the morning and one in the afternoon. They haven't announced that yet, but it'll probably go out first thing tomorrow. So yeah, that's, and then we also are doing staff town halls. So the town halls that we're doing for the public are with Access, our Access partners. And we're talking specifically about the Parent as Paid Caregivers program and the guidelines around that are going to be enforced come July 1. Enforced isn't necessarily a good word, but rolled out on July 1. So yeah, I think that's good. We've had a busy week so far. Cynthia.
One of my biggest concerns about this paid parent provider program is the magnet that it's become to most other states. I have taken at least 20 phone calls, several from Idaho, several from California, and people are moving here, already have moved here, are moving here from other states for this program. What is DDD and Access long-term plan in dealing with this, since other than one other state, our paid parent provider program is the most generous nationwide?
So one of the things that they're that Access is doing is that they're going to be rolling out some new tools for support coordination to use in the coming months. So we haven't released the details on what those look like, but it's from the they had a work group that has been working since last year to develop a plan to roll out the CMS guidelines that were supposed to go into effect last October, but they were extended to put into practice on 7/1. As far as growth is concerned, yeah, we're seeing it. And if you attend the town hall, Zane will present on the actual numbers. I don't know if you had an opportunity to attend, but he actually shows the amount of growth that we have experienced in the last 10 years and even in the last 2 years or since the pandemic. So,
I've been saying for 4.5 years, well, actually for 10, that DDD and Access have to do a better job of combating the incorrect information online about our state. And we're in danger if we keep attracting people from other states to endanger the programs that our people need. Mm-hmm. And if DDD and Access doesn't do something, I'm very worried that our families are not going to have what they need. And it seems to me like, and you can bring this feedback back to Zane, because he's heard it many times,
sure,
that you guys have not done a very proactive job of anticipating this kind of growth and how to protect the people that are Arizona residents now.
Cynthia, have you sent your feedback in? Did you attend the town hall this morning, the public town hall?
I did not attend, but I've given my feedback.
Okay, good.
Over the years, like, Zane should not be confused about my feedback.
Yeah.
Same with Access. I think this is a good program, but I'm very, very concerned about Idaho just got rid of their paid parent provider program. And a lot of those people in that state are thinking about moving here. Mm-hmm. And it very much concerns me. And I would like to see a more proactive approach. Mm-hmm. From DDD and Access about this issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's paint the PCPG program isn't the only thing by all means that is impacting the expense or the budget. It's one component of that, but heard.
So I've seen his PowerPoint. Like, I've seen the whole thing. I'm familiar with what he said and what the growth looks like. I'm just telling you that the phone calls I'm taking from families moving here is very concerning to me. Mm-hmm. So, and it should be to you guys too. Mm-hmm.
So. Thank you. Dee.
Yeah. First of all, regarding this morning's meeting, there were people who could not get onto the meeting, including myself, because it was at capacity. What is the capacity? Is it 500?
It was, but they just they just increased my license to 1,000, so we will not have that problem tomorrow night. The only thing that is concerning is that I have to switch it from a meeting to a webinar, so I'm not sure how that's going to impact the ability to interact via chat. I'm still doing the research on that, but that will not be a barrier tomorrow night.
The other thing is I actually did the math, and I don't know if my math is correct, but over the last decade, Arizona total population growth was 12.6%, and DDD's was 70.6%. But the thing that I think that we need to take into consideration is, unlike the rest of the population, DDD members and their families are not really portable. I can tell you that the minute that my son Andy qualified for services here in Arizona, my husband turned down many opportunities to leave the state, because we all know it's so complicated to get supports and services in place, and you have to start all over again if you go to another state. So it's interesting to see that during the pandemic, Arizona lost a significant number of population, but DDD didn't. Mm-hmm. And it's because our members and therefore their families can't move like everybody else, because except for our DDD services, really the other DES supports compared to other states suck. We have no state unemployment. We only have federal unemployment. You know, our food subsidy program, to the best of my knowledge, is only the federal program. It's not a state program, and it's one of the lowest in the nation. And it's unfortunately not like we have the best schools in the nation either. So
we don't have a wait list, D.
Right.
That is a big one, because many states for Medicaid have wait lists.
Right.
And there are some states where you'll wait for 15 years.
Yeah.
So we're very lucky in the states.
So it is a challenge, and I have no idea what the answer is. I'm not offering solutions, but I want to make sure that everybody understands that it's not a mismanagement issue for DDD. And the other thing is, I ran the numbers, and my math may be off, but I found that DDD is spending under $17,000 per individual. So if you just think about what supports and services usually cost, it's not a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I mean, that includes healthcare, because I'm assuming the budget for the integrated care plans is included in that DDD budget. Am I correct in assuming that?
Yeah, so, the only thing, I'm sorry.
I mean, we've really, if you think about it, DDD has really bent the cost curve in continuing to provide services. So I don't know the answer. I've been at this since 1980 when I started college, because my undergraduate degree is actually in public fiscal policy, but we're doing a good job. It's just our legislature doesn't agree with us, I guess.
Yeah, I'd like to add on to that. In the past, there used to be a survey that was done by United Cerebral Palsy. Mm-hmm. And they would come out and they would have customer satisfaction for people with disabilities. Arizona would be rated like 1, 2, or 3 almost always. Then they would go to the cost. Arizona spent less per individual that's on disabled individual than every other state by far, because we had it all in the community.
Mm-hmm.
All
the institutionalization.
Institutionalized. Mm-hmm. Now, I've not seen a report like that recently. I don't know if they're the guy that did it. I spoke to him. He's actually really conservative. His name's Taryn Bragdon. He was the company that did those surveys. He's the one that basically ran all the numbers. Mm. That report helped. I remember talking to people and saying, we spend less than all the other states, but yet the families and individuals, are there still issues? Sure, but we're always the happiest. Why is that? Because they're not institutionalized, they're in the community. So mm-hmm. I don't know how we can get that message out, but that's an important message. What Dee said, we spend 17 grand. You go to Texas, everybody's institutionalized. They don't have their wait list is 15 years and everybody's in institutions.
Well, on that note, that's my updates.
Well, that's everybody we've got with DDD for updates tonight. I don't think I missed anybody.
So we've got what the health plans and Larry. Who goes first? Larry?
Good evening, everybody. How are y'all?
We're doing great, Larry.
Oh, good. Just making sure you can hear me. You touched on one of my updates earlier, Dee, regarding the trade corp training for the Law 2000. So that's going to be coming out on the anniversary of when you took your initial training. So be on the lookout for an email from trade corp
And you should be able to pick that training, and it takes approximately 30 minutes at the most to get that done. So please, when you get that email, I think they want to try to get that done within 30 days of the receipt of that email. So if you could please get that done, that'd be awesome. The other update I have is I did schedule an open meeting law training with the AG's office on March the 7th and at 5 p.m. And I will be sending out an invite for that as well. So be on the lookout for that. If you can attend, that would be fantastic. Some of the new folks that are on the committee, I would suggest you sit in on it. It's a very informative, and it might answer some of the questions that gets bounced around during a meeting. I highly recommend it.
Hey, Larry, can I just add my 2 cents?
Of course.
I think it's important for as many of us as possible to attend so that we understand how picky the Attorney General's office is regarding open meeting laws and what you deal with. Because I got to tell you, as an attorney, I found them to be overly zealous.
Yeah, they're pretty stringent. And they do, like you said, overzealous. A lot of it pertains to, you know, if you're working with contracts and you're dealing with $1 million deals in the back room or something, and that's something they're trying to avoid. And so it's hard to kind of dovetail that into an IOC meeting. But I think that's where the training with the AG's office will come into play. And I think they do a good job in kind of boiling that down for us and make it easier to digest.
Yeah, I don't see that they don't understand that we don't deal with any money. We don't make any contractual decisions. And all we can do is ask questions. We can't even make people give us answers. We follow the same stringent rules, regulations, and laws. So.
Yeah. And I wanted to add the conflict of interest piece to that as well, but it would have taken quite a bit of time. And so I wanted to be respectful of people's time. So I'm going to schedule another training through the AG's office as well regarding conflict of interest, probably in a couple months, probably sometime in May, depending on their schedule. So I'll certainly let everybody know when that comes around.
Well, we're going to do our own little proviso. If anyone knows of an individual's situation, but doesn't know them personally, if you don't disclose that information, we never know that information. So
that's
correct. It's up to you whether or not you choose to share it.
That's correct. Yep. So
obviously, if you know them, if you have a relationship with them, and especially if you've corresponded with them either verbally or written about the specific incidents that are being talked about, yes, you have a conflict of interest. That's very clear. But if you read something in a Facebook group, it's up to you to decide whether or not you're going to disclose that information. And if you do disclose it, the Attorney General says you have a conflict. So you have to recuse yourself from an IOC discussion, both in the public meeting and in executive session. So.
Yes. Yeah. And that's a good rule to live by there. I agree. So those are my updates. Any questions that I could try to answer for the group? Okay. Well, thanks for having me. And if, as always, if you need anything, please drop me an email or give me a call.
We'll see you next month, Larry.
Okay. Thank you,
Dee. Hey, Wendy and Dawn, are you still with us?
Of course. I think Wendy's there too.
Do either one of you have an update for us?
Wendy, do you want to go or you want me to jump in real quick?
Oh, go ahead, Dawn.
Aw, thanks, Wendy. Us OIFAs. Hi, everybody. So thanks. I'm so glad that you gave me this opportunity because I've been talking about credentialed family and peer supports every time I come on these meetings. I just want you to know, even Dee came in one of our trainings with Caroline leading. We are in Arizona. We have very few credentialed family supports. And one of the missions of United, and I know Mercy Care, and even Wendy became a credentialed family support, is to increase that number because these families who touch behavioral health and whatever else they're going through really could benefit from a credentialed family support going in the home and walking along their healthcare journey together with someone who's trained to be able to know what the resources are. Cynthia, who's on not only our governance committee, but also our MAC, spearheaded an entire campaign where we created two crisis brochures, all because of her conversation, her pushing us to say, hey, this is really important. Families need to know what a crisis intervention could look like and what to do after. Thanks for that, Cynthia. I've also been trying to snag her to become credentialed family support for 2 years now. But anyway, my point is that please work either through Christina Hedges, Wendy Heron, or myself to educate. If you have families that are struggling with resources, credentialed family supports are a great answer to that. And I cannot plea enough for you folks to, when you're talking with members who have issues, to make them aware or give us any one of the OIFA's contact information. We're all here for it. Thank you.
Hey, Dawn.
Yes, ma'am.
I have a recommendation of a great presenter, but as far as I know, she's probably really enjoying her retirement and doesn't want to deal with us anymore. But man, if you could get Leah Gibbs helping you out, that would be amazing.
Well, I'll tell you, I haven't talked with Leah. I wanted to give her a little bit of space and not hound her. But as you know, Leah and I have plans. So
Dawn and I did not practice this, but Mercy Care is doing a lunch and learn about family support for adults. And that is going to be Monday, March 3rd from noon to 1. And I can send that information to Michelle to with the link and a little blurb with more about that. It should be a nice little moment. And then we have our Mercy Care Connections Conference coming up April 17th and 18th at the DoubleTree in Tempe for our ACC REBA line of business for adult members. And I'll send that link as well. Hopefully, if you're on any of our serve lists, you've seen that blurb come out and encourage people to register. It's always a great 2 days. And that's all I have, unless anybody has a question for me.
I do have a question for you, Wendy, for the PCH issues for Mercy Care members who are having difficulty. Should we continue referring them to the new person on the website instead of you?
So that has been adjusted. So hopefully it's been refreshed and it's back to me, but there might be an additional person. So, okay. But send them my way, Dee, and we will support them on a case-by-case basis. But I know that...
You heard my rant before we started the meeting.
I did. And, you know, it's part of our OIFA job to support members and families and everybody that you've sent my way. I've appreciated and gotten them to where they need to be. We actually recently supported a parent with this issue and was very pleased with the support. So send them my way.
Yeah, no, I know that both United Healthcare Community Plan and Mercy Care
is having those discussions with their providers to keep members and their families out of the middle of any issues they may be having with primary commercial insurance, and not using weasel words like may. But unfortunately, when you're a de facto monopoly, you can basically do whatever you want. So.
And I want to add, I want to call out United, because they just helped a family with similar issues and balanced billing, which we all know is illegal. So I'm so grateful to both health plans for really helping our members.
I'd also like to add, if I could, and I'm not sure, Angela, if this is okay, but I want this IOC to know that when it comes to DD members, if you guys, if you folks email me and are asking for support in any way, Christina is my go-to. We team up together if they're a United DD member, and she's in. You guys already know that, Dee, you've mentioned that quite a bit, but for the benefit of the recording and all those that are on this call, she jumps in head first and sorts and sifts and gets everybody involved. So I wanted to acknowledge that, that truly in the OIFAs, there is no competition. It's all collaboration.
On behalf of me, who gets to supervise Christina, aka work with her, thank you. No, I hear it all the time, and I knew it even before when we were just colleagues, but it's even more awesome to hear it now, and I hope to continue that relationship. And I know that I've already experienced such good collaboration with all the OIFAs, so thank you for being such great partners, guys.
As much as we miss Leah, Angie, you just slipped right into those shoes. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Do we have anything else on the agenda, Michelle?
No, that's it.
Okay, so it is now 8 of, does anybody have anything else they need to add? When's our next meeting, Michelle?
Next meeting is March 5th.
Okay, March 5th, it's a Wednesday, first Wednesday of the month, 6 to 8 p.m. It is 8 to 4 p.m. on the 5th of February. We're going to adjourn. When did you say our next statewide meeting is, Michelle?
April 23rd.
So you don't have to just be a chair to attend the statewide meeting. Everybody is welcome, although I attend it on our behalf so that the rest of you don't have to attend it. And Michelle brings back the updates. But anyway, I will see you next month. Thank you very much for your patience listening to our rants. And as I said, it's not directed at any individual who was at the meeting, because we appreciate all that you do. And it is going to be a really tough time ahead. Those who are aware of Arizona House Appropriations Committee, David Livingston's rant at the approves meeting, understand exactly what I'm talking about. Buckle up, because it's between that and what's going on in Washington.
He came out and apologized. It just got posted on Twitter.
Well, that's nice, but for those of us who survived
meeting the disability community, and I think it's great to see a legislator learn. So we need to keep that in mind and keep it going in a positive direction.
Yeah, but for those of us who survived the Great Recession, I think we're going to find that that was a picnic compared to what's coming in the future. So we all need to work together. So anybody else have any more comments before we call it a night? Okay, it's 8:06. It's a night. Thank you very much. See you next month.
Good night.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Good night.